New setup this time for us. Is this? Oh, it is. Okay. Guess so. I don't know if the recording is starting yet, but I think out of fairness to our presenters and to those of you who actually did show up, those couple of you.
I'm sorry?
Oh. Okay. People are coming. Good. Well, I will talk, and that will lead them hopefully to our program. And just for the purposes of the recording, this is the Seniors with Vision Loss portion of our morning program from 9 to 10:30. I am Bonnie Rennie, the current chair. And we have, as usual, a good program today whose presenters I will first introduce. Then I will make a couple of announcements, which I will repeat briefly at the end of this meeting as well, because we'll have a new crop by then. And our presenters, first of all, from the Dale McIntosh Center, which some of you are very familiar with, in Garden Grove in Orange County, for the people who might be listening to this. However, they reach beyond just Orange County, as they will tell you. And before I get myself in trouble too much about describing their program, they'll do that. The presentation is on one of the really premier Title VII, Chapter II older American programs for seniors who have vision loss. And our presenters today are the program manager for that program, Socorro Arroyo-Marchain, and also another member of this program, Jane Beglia. And before I turn it over to them, a couple of things to mention. On the table here, directly in front of me, I have a very few brochures that I brought today of our Failing Sight and the Family Plight brochure, which is on the website and I believe can be printed from there. We have English, Spanish, and written Chinese copies here. I also have only a couple of brochures because I couldn't misplace them on my way out the door. Brochures for another outstanding program, Senior Center Without Walls. And for our members who might not know, which I'm not naming, Senior Center Without Walls is a wonderful program. It's free, over the telephone, a virtual senior center, fun groups, support groups, entertainment groups, arts groups, writing and book club and all of that, all over the phone, all for free for any senior in California who is 60 years old or older. It's a wonderful program. I've been involved for about a year, and I try to promote it wherever I go. It's not a blindness program, but it's very blind, visually impaired friendly. And it's well worth anyone's investigating. And I'm telling some of you because you may know people who may benefit. The website is easy to remember, seniorcenterwithoutwalls.org. Seniorcenterwithoutwalls.org. And I'll save the phone number until at the end when there are more people here. Yeah, really. So with that said, I'm going to turn the mic over to Socorro and Jane. And what we're going to do with the answering questions, we will have to repeat this again, unfortunately. We've got the one mic. If you can state your question when you're ready for questions, Jane and Socorro will repeat rather than pass you the mic because it'll take longer out of our program. So I hope that's acceptable to people, and that way it gets recorded as well as you'll be able to hear the answer on the mic. Okay? And here is Socorro.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, Bonnie. Did you want to start, Jane?
Sure.
Do you want me to start? And then you can pass it on.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing today? All of you. like Bonnie said, my name's Jane Neglia, and I'm the program supervisor for our Aging with Vision Loss program at the Dale McIntosh Center. We were going to do some brief introductions. We just wanted to kind of know who was in the room, so I'm going to pass the mic to Socorro and let her introduce herself, and then we just like to know who's here.
There you go. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good
Good morning, everyone. My name is Socorro Arroyo-Merchain, and as Bonnie shared with you, I am a program manager at the Dale McIntosh Center, and I oversee about 5 different programs there, one of them being the Title VII Chapter 2 program. So Jane and I have been colleagues and friends now for going on 10 years, and together have really built up that program, and we're really proud of it. It's really near and dear to our heart, and we're really pleased to be here today to share with you information regarding specifically the Aging with Vision Loss program, which is the Title VII Chapter 2 program at the Dale McIntosh Center, and then share with you about other resources for seniors with vision loss. And also with us today are 2 guide dogs. So if you see us bending over and trying to correct them, they're both back here. One of them is a black lab, and her name is Nina, and the other is a yellow lab, and her name is Anya. And wherever we go, they're both just superstars. But yes, we'd like to know who else is in the room. So I think it's a small, intimate group. So I think we can. Did you like that? Do you like how I? Yeah. Very. Thank you. It's a small, intimate group, and so if you could share with us who you are, that would be lovely.
My name is Roger Peterson. I'm second vice president of California Council of the Blind. And by the way, for you folks up there, I'm also on the board of the Silicon Valley Independent Living Center. And I'm on the senior advisory committee of the City of Mountain View.
Teddy Joy Rimhill, and I'm happy to be here.
I'm Bob Rennie. I'm Bonnie's husband.
This is Gussie Morick, and I'm so happy to be here.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started, and I'm going to provide you an overview of the services offered by the Dale McIntosh Center. Because we feel that's important for you to have that background information, we're not a Title VII program that's necessarily exists on its own. We are part of an independent living center, which is critical to us in the way we provide services. So the Dale McIntosh Center is an independent living center. We work and provide services to our service area, which is all of Orange County. And we provide services to people with all types of disabilities. So not only vision loss, but people who have mobility impairments, people who have hearing loss, people who have multiple disabilities. So we do serve all of Orange County. We provide services to people with all types of disabilities, and our services are all free. The Dale McIntosh Center was named in honor of a young woman who in the late 60s and early 70s really was the mover and shaker in Orange County and spearheaded the disability advocacy movement in Orange County, and her name was Dale McIntosh. This young woman approached the Orange County Board of Supervisors and requested funding to start some type of organization to provide services to people in Orange County with disabilities. Well, the Board of Supervisors felt that, yes, the need was there, and it was an unmet need at the time, and so seed funds were awarded, and the organization began to form. Unfortunately, right before Dale McIntosh right before the center opened, Dale McIntosh herself passed away. And she was a young woman. She was in her, I want to say, in her late 20s, early 30s. And she herself had a disability. She had severe quadriplegia. And that, that did not stop her. That just made her a fierce advocate. And because of all her hard work, felt very fitting that the center be named in her honor. And so that's why we are called the Dale McIntosh Center. Many people think we're related to Dell, And the computer company, or Macintosh, the Apple, the other computer company, but we're not. So a little bit about our history and why, who we're named after, and we're really proud of Dale Macintosh and all the work she did, you know, before us, and really formed the agency in the Orange County, in Orange County, and we're still in touch with her family. They attend our annual event, so we're really proud of that. As far as an independent living center goes, the Dale Macintosh Center provides the four core services that every single independent living center is required to provide, which are independent living skills training, information and referral, advocacy, and peer support. And now also, actually, five transition services. So those are the core services that every single independent living center across the nation provides. And then on top of that, we have a host of other services. We offer over 12 to 15 different services and programs at the Dale Macintosh Center. And in your packet, which we have at the back, you can receive either a hard packet, an electronic packet on CD, which you would be able to access with a screen reader, or we do have the agenda in Braille also for today's presentation, and all that information that we're covering today is in that packet. So in the packet, there is detailed information about all the different services we have to offer at the Dale Macintosh Center. And we could go on for an hour and a half just on the services, so I won't. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of who we are as an agency, as an independent living center, a little bit about our history. We're a consumer-driven organization, which means the individual, the consumer, is in the driver's seat. We develop an independent living plan with the individual, and we're there to help guide and provide training and advocacy. 51% of our board members are people with disabilities, which is a very unique component of our organization and all independent living centers that we're really proud of. And so that just provides you a snapshot of who we are, who the Dale Macintosh Center is, and who we provide services to. And so the question is, how is our staff in regards to percentage of people with disabilities? Well, we definitely meet the mandate of 51% of our board and staff are individuals with people with disabilities. Our staff is about 79 in number. And yes, we're quite a large staff. Any other questions regarding what I've covered so far? The question is, do we provide housing or do we find housing for people? And the answer is yes. And that is, our housing coordinator is amazing. Her name is Judy Gonzalez. And she receives the highest volume of calls in the entire agency. And Jane can confirm that. Her office is right next to Judy. And Jane will share with me, Socorro, I don't know how Judy does it. I mean, she's almost... she needs to take a lunch. Make her walk away from her office to take that 10-minute break because it's just nonstop. I mean, as we all can imagine, the need for housing is incredible. And then if we take it a step further, and as an independent living center, we advocate for accessible, affordable housing, well, you can imagine how much more challenging that is, right? But the need is great, and yes, when we have emergency rental assistance, like we do right now, poor Judy is extremely busy providing emergency rental assistance to people with disabilities in Orange County looking for housing. Any other questions regarding? What the question is, what type of housing do we find with housing being so challenging and difficult? That's a really good question. It's really a combination of everything. Judy, our housing coordinator, is extremely resourceful and creative, and it really depends on the needs of the individual. It can range from, a room, renting a room in a home, to, renting a studio apartment, to apartments in senior HUD housing complexes, helping an individual get on the wait list if the wait list is open with the housing authority, just a variety of different types of housing situations. Correct. The comment was senior HUD housing complexes have waiting lists too. And yes, you're absolutely right. They do. And Judy is extremely good at establishing and building relationships. And so she's constantly, with the help of volunteers, calling the different wait lists just to see, how they're doing. What type of wait list is it? How many people are on the wait list? Will it be opening anytime soon? So she tries really hard to keep tabs on all the different wait lists. I didn't hear that. I'm sorry. Yes? Question? Hi, Gussie. Right. You're absolutely right, Gussie. Yes, the wait lists are extremely long at the senior HUD housing complexes, and then even with the housing authorities. In Orange County, we have 5 different housing authorities, and they're hardly ever open. And the wait list is anywhere from 3 to 5 year wait list for each of the housing authorities. So definitely understand your comment is the wait lists are long. Right. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on. Whoa, sorry about that. Got really loud there. I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to my colleague, Jane, and she is going to share more information with you about our Aging with Vision Loss program, which is specifically for older adults with visual impairments. How about that afterwards?
All righty. Again, good morning. And thank you, Socorro. That was a really nice introduction to Dale McIntosh Center. So I'm going to be talking to you, and I'm going to have to remind myself to talk slower. I'm a very fast talker, so I was listening to Socorro and trying to remind myself to talk slow. So I have been with at the Dale McIntosh Center going on almost 10 years and have been with the we call our Aging with Vision Loss program since the fall of 2001. A little bit about our program. Is everybody familiar with Title VII programs? Funding? A little bit? Oh, no? Okay. The Title VII funding is specifically to help older adults 55 and older who are experiencing vision loss, and most of them for the very first time in their life. There are, I believe, 17 agencies throughout the state of California that receive this funding. Not all of them are at independent living centers. Like Socorro said, ours happens to be at an independent living center. So there's, like I said, 17 agencies, and we've had this funding since 1996. So we're going on almost 15 years now. And when I came on board in 2001, the program was expanding. Like Socorro had mentioned earlier, the Dale McIntosh Center provides services to Orange County residents. And we do have a couple of programs that services expand outside of Orange County, and our Aging with Vision Loss program is one of those. So beginning in 2001, our service area expanded. So since then, we cover all of Orange County, the Southern Coast area of Los Angeles, and the San Gabriel-Pomona Valley area. So we have a very, very large service area.
And for most of the years that I've been on board, there have been three of us that have covered that large area. In order to qualify for our program, I'll give you a little bit of detail about that. Like I said, 55 and older, experiencing vision loss to the extent that it's impacting your activities of daily living, and that you live in one of our three service areas. Okay, so those are just those are the three criteria that someone has to meet in order to qualify for our services. And all of our services are free. And we provide our services in the home. They're all home-based services. Every Title VII program delivers services differently, and ours we've chosen to do in the home, partly because transportation, when you're older and you are visually impaired or blind, we're hoping that you're not driving. and so we know that it's difficult to get around and get to different places. So we thought the home-based services would be the ideal. And also teaching individuals activities of daily living and independent living skills training in their home. What a better place to do that in their own home environment where they're comfortable and familiar. Okay. Yes. Our three service areas are the Southern Coastal area of Los Angeles, Orange County, and the San Gabriel-Pomona Valley area. Yeah. Yes, we do. Yes. Okay. So we have, like I said, a large service area. And right now there are three of us that cover that area. We recently, about 20 months ago, received a grant, an ARRA grant, an American Restoration Reinvestment Act funds, which allowed us to bring two additional staff on board to help provide services, and which really, really helped, increase our numbers and our being able to get out and provide services. And that funding ended at the end of September. So we're back to three counselors again, covering those areas. Okay. So a little bit about how our program works. We'll receive a referral. Our referrals come from a wide variety of areas. We do a lot of outreach presentations in the community. We present our program at senior centers, assisted living centers, case managers, any agency that works with seniors. We try to reach out and present our program and make them aware of our services that are available. So we receive referrals, like I said, from a wide variety of places. We get word of mouth, go out and visit somebody in their home, and they might have a friend that is experiencing vision loss and tells them about our program. So that's how we get our referrals. If you want to refer to us, it's very easy. It's just a phone call and let us know the person's name and phone number, and we can and make a phone call and set up an appointment with them. Okay. So when we receive that referral, we will call the individual on the phone and talk to them, do an intake over the phone and ask them a lot of questions. How is your vision loss impacting your activities of daily living? What kinds of things aren't you able to do that you want to be able to do independently when you know that you had things that you were doing when you had vision that you're not able to do now? So we really try to let the individual define what areas they want help with and what services they are looking for. And so we kind of create, like Socorro said, an independent living plan from what they share with us and the goals they want to accomplish, whether it's being able to read and write again, manage their mail, read their medication bottles, use their microwave, do their laundry, and anything, in regards to our activities of daily living, whatever they define. So we create an independent living plan, and we begin services, and we go out to the home and train them on these various areas of daily living skills. Okay. Through that, and I have to say, probably the majority of the seniors that we provide have macular degeneration. And Socorro is going to talk a little bit more about the age-related types of eye diseases. But the majority of them have macular degeneration. And is anyone familiar with macular degeneration?
Yes.
Okay. And as we know, you lose your central vision. And without your central vision, it makes it very difficult to read and to write and recognize faces. So a lot of the majority of the things that people are really struggling with is reading their mail and managing, their finances and their medications. And And so, and using the telephone, all of those, you know, simple day-to-day activities that, you know, they all were able to do very easily with vision. So we definitely go out and we provide all of that training. We do refer to a lot of other agencies. We collaborate a lot and coordinate services. For example, transportation services. Unfortunately, we don't provide transportation through our program, but there are a lot of resources in Orange County and the other areas that we serve that do provide transportation. So we make those referrals. We walk them through the application process, help them fill out forms, acquiring a telephone that they can use independently. As we all know, with vision loss, it can be very isolating, especially when you're new to vision loss. People need to be able to use their telephone and use it independently and make phone calls. So we help them with that. Audiobooks, people want to continue reading, we introduce them to audiobooks, specifically through the Braille Institute, their digital book player. We do that. We also, like I said, coordination of services. Because we do go into the home and we are working with seniors, you know, we encounter a lot of other things and challenges that they're encountering. A lot of our seniors aren't able to prepare meals anymore, so we connect them to maybe Meals on Wheels in the community. If they're, like I said, transportation is huge, as we know. So a lot of coordination of services goes on, other than just the independent living skills training in the home. One of the great things that we've been able to do is establish low vision peer support groups out in the community. We have, I think right now, 8 low vision peer support groups going on out in the community that we are facilitating. 2 of them are in Spanish, and that is one of the things that's been really wonderful with the stimulus money we received. We were able to establish some support groups in Spanish. There's a huge need out there for older adults who do not speak English, and Spanish being their primary language have been really kind of fallen into that gap of not getting services. So that's been really a wonderful opportunity for our program and for the community. And in those low vision peer support groups, you know, we talk about all kinds of things, activities of daily living. We bring all kinds of information and assistive technology devices to share with the group. The group talks about, you know, their daily challenges, and they help one another. They help one another get through the day-to-day challenges. And it's really been a positive thing out in the community. We've had some really good responses, and we have some wonderful groups. And they've been going on for a long time. We have one in Cerritos Vintage that's been going on for almost 8 or 9 years. So that's been one of our highlights of our program, is our peer support groups. Any questions so far about what we do in the home?
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know how it's different from the consumer's point of view. It seems on the surface that, as I said, I'm on board of the Living Center as well as being part of the white community for age to age. It would seem as though there's advantages to having a blank center for the blank where there's a low vision clinic, there's a specialist.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, and let me just kind of sum up your question. You were asking specifically because it takes place at an independent living center, our Title VII program, compared to, say, the Center for the Partially Sighted, who has Title VII funding where they have a low vision clinic, orientation, and mobility. Is that what your question is? Well, with our program and what we've been doing, and we also, I hadn't quite gotten there yet, but we do have an orientation and mobility trainer on staff. So we are able to provide orientation and mobility training to our consumers. And we also have some really good collaborations with the Braille Institute, the Southern California College of Optometry, that those two places provide low vision evaluations to our consumers. And we've really made it a point to, when we go out to do a home visit, oftentimes we find people using a magnifier or, you know, any kind of device that they never really were assessed for. It was something that was passed down from their great-great-grandmother. I see this all the time. And it's a beautiful antique magnifier, but is it helping them? Not usually. Or they go, you know, to Rite Aid and just buy something off the shelf because people haven't been educated on, and a lot of people think the bigger the magnifier, the more they're going to see, and it's really the opposite. So our first thing that we really do is encourage our consumers to go have a low vision evaluation either at the Braille Institute or at the Southern California College of Optometry. And we go with them to the appointment. And we attend the appointment, so we're there through the assessment process, are aware then of the recommendations made by the low vision evaluator. And once those recommendations are made and the individual purchases those items, we then, you know, can go back into the home, work with them in their home to ensure that they're using those items correctly. So what we've done, because like you said, we don't have all of those things in one place, we've worked really hard to establish, and like you said, we don't want to compete with anybody, and there's so many gaps out there. We have to collaborate. It is. It is. And it's, you said from the consumer's point of view, it can be, I didn't hear.
Equivalent.
Oh, equivalent. Right. Right. It is. Yeah. Yep.
That's a great question. And Jane brought up a huge piece that is pivotal when providing Title VII Chapter 2 services to from an ILC perspective, is collaboration. Because, you know, service provision is unique when it's provided from the IL perspective. But this question that you pose, we actually went around the room and discussed just recently, was it when we were up in Sacramento, we had an OIB summit, an OIB, Older Individuals Who Are Blind, an aging summit, and they brought us together, Department of Rehabilitation brought us together, and that was one of the questions. Who should be at the table? Well, of course, both sides, both the IL and the ILC and the blindness-related organizations, we both, you know, we kind of all pondered that, and we all want to be at the table, and it's really a good thing, because I think we raise awareness to one another and share and help each other brainstorm to best meet the needs of our specific service areas. That's the other really unique component, is that of the 17 providers of Title VII Chapter 2 services in the state of California, they vary. I mean, because they have to be tailored and individualized to meet the needs of the specific geographic catchment area. Yes, question.
My experience is that older adults with new vision loss don't like the word blind anyway.
No, yeah, they can't see well. It just...
But, my question, though, is how long do you keep a case on your file? I mean, how long do you provide services to one situation?
Sure.
It depends. It depends. You know, as long as they need services, is kind of the way we've looked at it. I've had people that, you know, they really, at the time when I've gone out to see them, they're really, you know, only needing at that time being able to use their telephone and say their microwave, you know. So we do tactile markings, and at that time they really, and we let them define. I mean, there's one thing that I have learned doing this for as long as I have. When I first started, I'd go in and just, and here, you need this, you need this, you need this. There's so many things available. But what I've learned is, you know, especially with seniors, it's a lot of information and it's very over. So we've really taken a step back and let them define, try not to overwhelm them with services, and try and really put the services kind of in perspective from what's the most important thing they need right now. I mean, some people are just desperate and need transportation, or they need to get to that low vision evaluation but can't get there. So, you know, we're going to put transportation in place first, and then get them to the low vision evaluation. And we have other consumers that we've been working with off and on for years, because their vision changes. They hear about something new and they want to learn something. But when it gets to the point where they maybe don't need services at that time, or they can't specifically define a goal that they want to accomplish, we will close their file. But it's very easy to reopen it. If they have something else that they want to learn about, we just open their file back up and then provide another visit. And I also wanted to also backtrack a little about what we were just talking about before. I think the biggest thing with services for older adults is choice. I mean, there are people that don't want to go to a center and take classes, you know, and then they really like the home visit. And then there's people that really are active and social and want to get out and prefer to go to a center like the Braille Institute. Their classes are home-based or center-based. What it does, too, is give people a lot of choices about how they want, you know, to receive the different services. But like Socorro said, we've established good, really strong collaborations with the Braille Institute, with the College of Optometry, with a lot of case managers who work with seniors specifically. So it's been really a good thing. And we are also, the Southern California area Title VII programs have, since the OIB summit, we've been collaborating as well, and we have quarterly phone calls with the other Title VII programs in Southern California. And so we're collaborating together to talk about different issues we're encountering. Right now we're talking about, I think our last thing was volunteers? And cultural, underserved populations. We have in Orange County and our areas, we have a high volume of individuals that only speak Spanish, and then Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese, how to reach out to these different underserved populations. So we had a whole conversation and throwing around ideas how to best reach out to those underserved populations as well. So we've got strong collaborations with all the other Title VII programs as well. Any other questions about? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. I do know that, yes, we had one right next door to us. It was an adult daycare center for Korean people who spoke only Korean for older adults, and that closed. Several of them are closing, yes. Mm-hmm. California. Okay, Teddy was just, we were talking about the older adult daycare centers and how, because of our economic times, a lot of these centers are closing, and they're supposed to be closing down by December 1st of this year, of 2011. Okay. I do know. Well, they're going to end up in nursing homes, and, you know, it does, it absolutely does. I know next door to us where that daycare center closed, they are opening what's called a PACE center. I don't know. Is anyone familiar with PACE centers?
Yeah, that's just a very small program.
It is a very small program. Right. So no, next door, at least in Orange County, and I'm hoping that they're going to start popping up other places. But I'm sitting on the advisory committee for that PACE center to be opened, and I know they're going to be opening one in South Orange County. And a PACE center is an all-inclusive care center for older adults, and it is Medi-Cal based. And like you said, it is small. I think they only have maybe 18 to 20, maybe 30. People attending there. Like I said, it's all inclusive. They're going to have nurses there on site, doctors on site. If something happens and they need to go, there's an emergency and they need to go to the hospital. It's an HMO, basically, center, where everything's done right through that center. Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, they're not optometrists. I don't know. I can't speak for LA Braille, but Orange County Braille, there's two of them. There's Jamie McAllister and John Dunn. They are not optometrists. They are certified low vision therapists. What, CBTs? CLVTs. What they're doing, and I can tell you the difference between the Braille Institute and the College of Optometry. The Braille Institute, like I said, they're low vision therapists. They look at magnifying glasses. They show video magnifiers, address lighting, sunglasses. And what they do is try to find the functional. they work with the functional vision, what vision that individual has left. They try to maximize that by showing them and introducing them to different optical devices. Now, the College of Optometry is a teaching college, so they're a low vision department. And so somebody can go there and have a full low vision eye exam the students are there learning to be optometrists, and they are overseen by certified optometrists. So they have a low vision exam, and again, at the difference is, and they do the same thing, they do the low vision exam and will prescribe optical devices, but they can also prescribe glasses there at the College of Optometry as well. But they have all kinds of magnifiers, glasses, lighting. They have a whole assistive technology little lab that they can show people computer programs that are accessible with vision loss, video magnifiers, CCTVs. So it's kind of along the same line.
So what do the Braille Institute people do when situation is beyond their skill?
They would go to the College of Optometry. I have seen Jamie make recommendations there because she feels that maybe glasses will help them. The low vision therapists at Braille are extremely knowledgeable and very, very, very thorough. And yes, if she thinks that maybe a pair of eyeglasses will help, enhance what she's doing, she will make a recommendation for them to go over to the College of Optometry. However, the College of Optometry assessment is not free. Medicare, if you have Medicare and a PPO, it will pay for it, and you do have to have a referral from your eye doctor to have that paid for. I believe the exam is about $150.
Now they changed the name of it to Star Guards, which our speaker last night was talking about. But one of the things that might encourage you and your work to know, and I don't know if you're aware, that ACB, an advocacy, a consumer advocacy organization of blind people, is now advocating to have CCTVs and other low vision devices paid for by Medicare. So that's something
right, and just to repeat what Teddy was saying is that ACB, which is an advocacy group, they're really working hard to hopefully in the future have Medicare pay for some low vision devices such as CCTVs or video magnifiers, which we find is we actually have some that we loan out to people. We've acquired some over the years. You know, individuals pass away and their families call us and they have this device, and what do we do with it? And we'll take all those donated video magnifiers, and then we reloan them out to people in the community that can really use them. Either they're low income and can't purchase one, or they're, you know, 80, 90 years old and we don't want to necessarily put them through the Department of Rehab process. And so we'll loan them out a video magnifier. So that's another thing we've started with. And we've been really, really fortunate at the Dale McIntosh Center to have a wonderful grant writer who has been able to secure a lot of foundation funding for us to be able to purchase low-tech and some high-tech assistive technology devices that we're able to provide free of charge to our consumers. So we give everybody, on an initial home visit, they get a talking clock, they get bold-lined paper, pens. We've been able to provide, we've been able to purchase magnifiers for individuals that can't afford them that have been recommended, say, by the Braille Institute. We've been able to do that. We've been able, portable devices, handheld video magnifiers like the Pebbles or there's so many of them out there. So we've been really fortunate to be able to do that with our program. Yeah.
This is Bonnie. Yes.
Okay, to address Bonnie's question, as she wanted to know in regards to how the referrals come into our program, one, have we tapped into presenting or outreaching to large faith-based communities, churches, and whatnot? And then the other part of your question was how many people have been referred, maybe just getting online and Googling blindness or vision loss. To address the first one, and that's a really good I just received one recently, and I haven't specifically reached out to large churches, but that's a really, really good suggestion. But I did receive a referral last week from a visiting pastor from a church. I haven't spoken to him. We've been playing phone tag on the phone, so I'm not exactly sure how he heard about our services, but he's a visiting pastor and goes out and visits older adults who cannot get to church. But that's something definitely for us to reach into, because like you said, I mean, there's so many churches out there and a lot of large churches with older adults. So that would be a good thing for us to focus on. And the second part of your question, not too many that I've heard about people Googling us or blind, you know, putting in blindness. It's been amazing to me when I ask people where you heard about us and where they heard about us. And it's just how news travels. We had somebody, it was very interesting recently, someone called to make a referral from a appliance store. And we were laughing so hard. I'm like, appliance store? But then it all made sense, because what has happened is this appliance store get a lot of people that have come in who are blind, low vision, you know, to buy washers and dryers, and heard about us, I think, from either the Braille Institute or from the consumer, and they wanted to know, you know, what kinds of washing machines should they be recommending to people, you know, that need to use, you know, be able to use the washer and dryer. Because as you know, some of them are not accessible. They have this plastic thing that spins around and you can't label things, and it makes it impossible to do your laundry. So we were going to collaborate with them, but she had a referral, you know, for our program, but wants to collaborate with us, and so we can go out and educate them so they know what kinds of appliances to sell to people when they come in looking. I just thought that was so interesting. Yeah, we get some of those. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Daycare center. I had opportunity to work there 3 years teaching Braille. doing there. And that young man, Martin Graham, had 3 weeks, and he was able to read them books in about 2 months, went into college, and now he's studying to be a teacher. So something good came out of that. And we even had one of the 90 years old that we were working with, and we were working on Fridays, so Friday we went after the school.
Mm. So just to repeat what she said, she was just making a statement about she had worked or volunteered at an adult day center teaching teaching Braille to individuals that came in there, and just how some of them are kind of being forced out. Is that correct, what you were saying? Out of the adult day center. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And some of them went back home because they're not able to attend there anymore because it's closed. Right. Yeah. Just to summarize quickly what Bonnie had said, she said in the archives of the CCB conventions on the website, there was a presentation done by Gussie and Michael Williams on teaching Braille to older adults and how, you know, not only was it stimulating, you know, at least, you know, for the brain, and we all know we need to keep our brains active. I can see how that would be definitely stimulating. But teaching the older adults Braille and how amazing they were in acquiring that skill, and also if they weren't able to read the Braille tactily, they were introducing them to, like, the Braille and Speak, so that they were able to maybe do Braille that way and but have the audio you input on the Braille keyboard, and then you get the audio back if they weren't able to read it tactily. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And Gussie was saying it was more just that they could learn Braille mentally, but they couldn't tactilely do it, maybe because of neuropathy in their fingers. But they knew Braille, but they weren't able to just read it tactilely. So that's when the Braille and Speak maybe came into play. We're gonna move on. If anybody has any other questions about our program specifically. Okay. Okay. No, we have not. Oh, she was asking if we had taken advantage of the Fred's Head. Do you want to answer that one? I don't. Okay, so it's a website on the national. Oh, okay, it's kind of, does he do podcasts or just?
No, if you want to know how to do a particular task, you go up to a lot of different options on how to do a particular task.
Oh.
There's no one right way. But like if you wanted to, like on washing machines, there's no particular washing machine that's special.
Right.
Do, like ours, we have teacher come in and put
right, and I think what's going to happen, especially right now with the seniors that we've been working with, technology is very new to them. You know, our 75, 80, 90-year-olds, a lot of them aren't even using computers at this time. But as we know, the population is aging. The baby boomers are beginning to age, and they are all going to be technologically savvy. That's okay. So our next generation of seniors that are beginning to age are going to be technologically savvy, and those are the kinds of resources that are going to be amazing for them, is to be able to get on the website and find out information like that. And I'm going to definitely check that out. So Cora wants to add something.
Okay, can we repeat the website?
Oh, a Fred's Head?
No, the website is
www.aph.org. .aph.org. It's the American Printing House website, and there's a link on there to Fred's Head. Okay. So he does not have a specific website that we know. Okay. That's great information. Thank you for sharing that. Another question? Yes, I believe that would probably be the center for the partially sighted. Is that the San Fernando Valley area?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. In the packets that are in the back of the room, there is, and on the CDs, there is a listing of all of the Title VII programs for older adults in the whole state of California. It's listed in there and all of their contact information. Okay. Any other questions? Bonnie, you had a question? Yes.
And I know we don't have a lot of time to go into this, but because we in CCB, we like to educate our presenters about who we are and what we have to offer.
Right.
As well as we, of course, want to learn what is possible to do and what other agencies have to offer. So on the support group end, I'm wondering if you could characterize either of all of your people who serve, who is most likely to come.
Okay. Right.
Okay. I think Bonnie's question, and I know Socorro and I can both add to this, but Bonnie's question is in regards to our peer support groups that we offer out in the community, and she wants to know what attracts people to those groups, where we have found the most success as far as getting people to come to those groups, and what kinds of things we talk about at the groups. Does that pretty much sum up your question? Okay. The majority of the groups that we are facilitating right now, we have found, and the easiest has seemed to be in assisted living centers, assisted living homes, or senior apartment, kind of where all the seniors are already living, and also in Laguna Woods Village. I don't know if you're familiar with Laguna Woods down in South Orange County, but it's a huge senior community. We have one there as well. But that seems to be our most success. At least right now, we've had a couple started at senior centers, and they seem to have fizzled out a little bit. But right now, yes, at the we also have the two Spanish ones I spoke of. We do facilitate one at the Braille Institute because they've asked us to, because we have staff that speak Spanish, and we also have a Spanish support group at the Dale McIntosh Center once a month. We hold that there, and Socorro can talk about that more, but. In regards to our other groups, it's been the easiest, and we have really good relationships with, like, the recreational coordinator at the assisted living place, or the person who coordinates all the functions or the activities for the seniors, and those we've established really good relationships. And they know all their residents really well and who's there with vision loss and try to bring people to the group. And all the seniors know each other that live there, so they've kind of had that rapport established. But it's an interesting process, and they all the groups are different. They want information. They want to know about the technology. A lot of them want medical information, you know, about the latest research that's going on in vision loss. I'm going to let Socorro talk to you about the two groups that we've been able to establish in Spanish.
Thank you, Jane. Just go ahead. Did you have another question?
Kind of addressed it a little bit. They want information. I guess I'm looking at barriers to accepting services, or barriers to dealing with whatever you want to call their vision loss, that keep them from moving forward in their own goals.
Okay, that's a great question. Attitudinal barriers that keep people from moving forward in the process, in the adjustment process, and reaching some personal goals. And yes, we encounter that. Most definitely. However, most often when a person does step forward and is open to participating in a low vision peer support, they've usually worked through that. Maybe they're a little bit in limbo. So through the group process and through assisting them in establishing a peer network, they are able to get through that phase and really get to the point where, okay, yes, I have vision loss. I am legally blind due to macular degeneration or glaucoma, whatever the case may be. I'm here with this group. I understand. I see other people who are sharing this similar experience, and let me move forward and recognize that it's okay to ask for help, and I'm ready to learn new ways of getting things done. But you're right, that attitudinal barrier that individuals experience, whether it's the actual person who has the vision loss, or many times it could be family members who impose that, you know, okay, you're blind now, and therefore I have to take care of you, and I cannot allow you to cook in the kitchen, you know. So many of our participants share all those different perspectives with them, and through their participation in the low vision peer support groups, we're able to work through all that. And it is incredible. I wanted to share with you that out of our 8 low vision peer support groups right now, 5 are in assisted living facilities. We have 1 in a senior HUD housing complex. And then we have 2, like Jane mentioned, 1 is at the Dale McIntosh Center,
and the other one is at the Braille Institute in Anaheim. So a little bit of a varied, you know, as far as location. I would say that over 75 participants are women. Yes. Okay. Thank you. And so just to give you a little bit of insight in regards to that, and lastly, before I wrap it up, is yes, we identified an unmet need. There was a gap in services. As you may know, Orange County has a high concentration of a Latino community. And many seniors, monolingual Spanish-speaking seniors with vision loss, were not receiving services in a culturally and linguistically competent manner. And so through our Aging with Vision Loss program and at the Dale McIntosh Center, we recognize that as an unmet, a gap in services, put things in place. And so now we're able to provide services in a culturally and linguistically competent manner. So providing services, including peer support, in a person's primary language is crucial. So we're really proud of that. And because of our strong collaboration with the Braille Institute, you know, they recognize that they're without a field coordinator, without staff who are bilingual, and so they come to us. And so it's about that, you know, providing services as a network in the spirit of collaboration. So that's been pivotal for us in Orange County. And that's as much as we can go into right now in regards to this question. So I'll hand it over to Bonnie and for the announcement.
Okay, great. And we do have a little bit of program left, but okay. Jean, please go ahead.
Do you need it?
Okay, well, sure.
Here you go, Jean. Thank you, and I apologize for the interruption. This has to do with, it's to let you know that there's a few more tickets left for the luncheon today and for the banquet. And if you know people who haven't purchased them, please encourage them to go as soon as possible. We are, to be honest with you, not going to meet our food and beverage minimum, which impacts, and the organization is going to have to pay for rental of rooms if we don't meet the breakout rooms. So if any of you have been deliberating whether you're going to buy a ticket or not for the banquet this evening, you can do that until 1:30 today. Go to the registration desk, and it's $35, or for the luncheon, there's still a few tickets left, and that they need to immediately get that count, and that's $25. Thank you, and I'm sorry for the interruption.
Okay, well, thank you for the chance to help the organization. Great. Get your banquet tickets and your lunch tickets. Before I pass the mic back, I just wanted to chair's privilege here. The last thing that you addressed on linguistically and culturally competent services, in this case to the Latino population, I wish you guys, you'll just love me for this, I wish you could publish at some point, because I suspect, although you may not be the only ones providing such competent services, culturally competent, I'm sure a lot of people could really benefit, if not directly, indirectly. For any of us, we all come from a culture or a combination of them, and we'd probably all behoove ourselves to educate ourselves about other cultures of which we may not be familiar, whatever cultures those might be. And so I hope someday, somehow, we can get a grant for that. But and then I just wanted to mention the attitudinal aspect, and I hadn't planned to get in a plug about this. Want to ask the question, but I will now. Almost everyone here is very familiar with the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee's old, well-worn booklet, Failing Sight and the Family Plight. if you can really use a copy of this, because I only brought a few. We have English, Spanish, and written Chinese up here in front of me. Perhaps if you'd like one when we're done here before Bernice comes at 10:30, feel free to get one or raise your hand if you need help with getting one. It's on the website. We in the committee are in the middle of writing a second booklet that I would say goes a little more, it's a little different and goes a little more into attitudes via a story told of a lady and her friends who has experienced vision loss. And we're hoping that it will be something that if not the persons, their families, such as the one that we've already done. How to get more information on the Failing Sight and Family Plight, go to the website, ccbnet.org, under the resources link. Also, you can call the office. I believe we still have copies at the office. Good. So the office number, 800-221-6359. Probably everyone in here knows that number. And I'm hoping we're working on trying to get an illustrator for this booklet because we really feel that it will address some other things and it will be a reason for you all to join our committee or even not join the committee, dare I say, and help us distribute either the first booklet or the one we're working on when we get it done. It's a way of getting an entree into places where people may congregate that would benefit. And with that, I will turn it back. I have a brief announcement at the end of this before 10:30, but the rest is yours.
Okay. Let me find you here. Got it. Thank you. Okay, we're going to start wrapping it up, but before we do, there are two more areas that we want to cover with you and share with you. I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about share with you about our participants, our program consumers, and the different types of age-related eye conditions that the majority of them experience. I'm sure you as an audience are aware of these eye conditions, so feel free to shout out some answers. What do you think are some of the top age-related eye conditions that our participants experience? You got it, diabetic retinopathy.
Age-related,
yes, age-related macular degeneration, wet and dry. Glaucoma. And there's a fourth.
RP?
No, I haven't heard it yet. It's cataracts. Cataracts, yes. And of those four age-related eye conditions, the majority of our consumers, program participants, have macular degeneration, either wet or dry. The as far as a secondary eye condition or a condition that is increasing as far as prevalence would be diabetic retinopathy. 1 in 12 individuals with diabetes will acquire vision loss due to diabetic retinopathy. And we are seeing that, I mean, over and over, day in and day out. And what's really just also alarming is that we are receiving calls for younger individuals in need of services. So outside of the scope of services that we can provide through our Title VII Chapter 2 program, we as much as we would love to provide everybody services regardless of their age, our Title VII Chapter 2 program services are only for individuals 55 years of age and older. That's how those funds were allocated under the Rehab Act. And so we have to comply with that requirement. So it is alarming when we're getting calls from discharge planners at hospitals for a 38-year-old who just lost their vision completely in a matter of days because the diabetes, you know, had been unmanaged. And now they need services. And so fortunately, through some foundation funding, Jane mentioned we have an amazing grant writer, and she is just amazing. we've been able to acquire additional funds to provide services on a much smaller scale to a younger than 55 population. So I just wanted to give you that tidbit. And then go into and share with you quickly a success story. I want you to think about this. We provided services to a woman, a 55-year-old female in Orange County who had dual sensory loss. So vision loss, legally blind, due to glaucoma. And this individual was also experiencing profound hearing loss. We would do very well during the one-on-one independent living skills training as long as there were no other ambient noise. You know, if there was ambient noise, we would, you know, voices would have to be raised and always remembering, okay, is the hearing better out of the left ear or the right ear? So taking all those different factors into account. Well, this individual was receiving one-on-one independent living skills training through our counselor, had reached most of her goals and was ready now to learn how to use the long mobility cane. Our O&M instructor went out to provide services, and we're very fortunate we have a bilingual O&M instructor. This person receiving services is Spanish-speaking only, so we were able to provide services to her in her primary language. And our O&M instructor went out, but it was really challenging because of the added component of hearing loss. And so it was challenging, you know, and it got to a point where was it possible, feasible to continue providing safe training to this individual? And it was. We got really creative, and some of you may be familiar with sound amplifiers. Personal sound amplifiers, like the Pocket Talker. Anybody heard of those? Yes? Okay. And so with the use of... Yes. So I know some of you are familiar with that. So with the use of a Pocket Talker, the individual was wearing the headpiece, and then the O&M instructor was wearing the microphone and could speak from over a block distance, and with the implementation of that device, it made O&M training possible. Exactly. It was what? Oh, it was, Jane reminded me, what was most impressive was prior to the use of the Pocket Talker, one of the things that made the O&M instructor stop training during one session is that the individual could not identify and hear the flow of traffic. And as we all know, that's crucial, right? We have to be able to hear the flow of traffic. And so she was not able to. And so next session, she implements the Pocket Talker. The flow, she could hear the surge of one car with the use of the Pocket Talker. That was pretty incredible. And it was interesting because, you know, she gave her a quick overview of the Pocket Talker, how it was going to be implemented in training. They got started, and the O&M instructor is behind the participant, and they're about almost a full block distance, and it's crystal clear sound. But then the consumer started answering her. And the type of Pocket Talker we have, the O&M instructor couldn't hear a word the individual was saying. And so she had to tell her, by the way, I can't hear what you're saying. I see your lips moving, and I kind of see your head bopping, and you're kind of laughing. She's all, but I can't hear what you're telling me. I'm just letting you know because people are walking by, and they're looking at you like, you know. So they got a good laugh out of that. And it was just an amazing success story. And because it really allowed this individual to continue with her O&M training, to learn new routes. And this person is one of those individuals that just absorbs the information and the training and just is so open to it and is now traveling throughout Orange County, here and there and everywhere, with such a simple, you know, a simple fix. So that's just one example of a success story that illustrates the services that we're able to provide through the Aging with Vision Loss program at the Dale McIntosh Center. And I think we're up with time, Bonnie. Are we able to take some
pretty close? Is there any last questions?
Last minute questions?
Hearing none. Are you about the only program that has a home-based service for the Title VII?
Bonnie's question, are we the only program who provides home-based services through the Title VII? I'm quickly scanning my memory. Oh, thank you. Somebody said Vista Center does home visits, and I believe there are others that provide both itinerant, which the home-based, and center-based. It's a combination. Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Good question. Where does our funding come from? Well, the funding for our Aging with Vision Loss program, the primary funding is our Title VII Chapter 2 funds that are administered to us through the Department of Rehabilitation. So that's the primary source that funds. Yes. Correct. Yes. So that's our primary source of funding that allows us to operate our Aging with Vision Loss program. And then we also have an amazing grant writer, and she is able to acquire additional funds for us because she knows the program so well and is able to tell our story. And those additional supplemental funds allow us to do innovative and creative things like purchase assistive technology to be able to then turn around and provide to our consumers, whether it's low-end or high-end. It also has allowed us to coordinate and have recreational activities where we're able to go and visit, for example, the Arboretum and take a busload of our consumers and have a picnic there, and we cover all the expenses. Oh, no, you won't. You won't find out who she is. No. No. Yes. We do have foundation funds that allow us to do other things outside of the scope of our Title VII funds that enhance our program. Any other questions? Thank you. We do love our job.
Here you go, Bonnie. I'm handing you the microphone.
Thank you. Well, again, thank you to Socorro and Jane for presenting on the Aging with Vision Loss program, if I could talk, from the Dale McIntosh Center. As they mentioned, if you're here and you're from another part of the state and you want to know where are the Title VII Chapter 2 programs in your area, there is information at the back in alternative formats. They took the trouble to make sure we had that. And I just, in closing here, Bernice is about to come on. Again, a plug for the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee, if there's anyone in here. I know people are busy in this organization already because we do so many things. If you have an interest in seniors, and I'm getting choked up about it. Look at that. Still getting over a cold here. We would love to have you explore the committee. As you know, the way you get on a committee is to contact our president, Donna Pomerantz, through the office. Tell her you'd like to be on the committee. Prior to that, if you wish, you can certainly talk to me. And they have my name. Bonnie Rennie is my name. They know the committee I'm chair of. So if you'd rather talk to me before you call Donna, please do. We need more members. If we're going to do more stuff, we need more members who have ideas and are willing to work. Now, I've got 1 minute left, I think. I want to again mention the agency that I mentioned. It's a nonprofit agency that we have become quite connected with here in the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee. Senior Center Without Walls Actually, we learned of this program through one of our committee members, Linda Perrell. They are a program. They're located in Oakland. They're nonprofit. They are free. They are a way for you to attend a senior center, experience the groups and the discussions, the mental and social stimulation, the fun, the support groups, without ever leaving your home if you wish to do that. You do not have to be totally home in your home in order to use that program. You just have to be 60 years old, 60, and live in California. The toll-free net, well, it's funded through Episcopal Senior Communities. However, it is not, it's totally non-denominational. It's not even about that. But they happen to fund the program. But it's not a religious organization, if anyone has any concerns. Our committee likes to promote inclusion, and this, although it's not a blindness program, it's very visually impaired, blind friendly. The toll-free number to get signed up, to get more info, and it's a very easy process to do, is 877-797-7299. The website, really easy to remember, seniorcenterwithoutwalls.org. And again, the number 877-797-7299. If you want more info on that, you can call the CCB office, ask for me, or just remember that website. And I would strongly recommend, we have a lot of visually impaired people, and they do have alternative formats for people. Okay, I am finished. Thank you all. Thanks to our presenters. Thanks to our attendees. And I'm passing it over to Bernice.
Ladies, I'd like to get a business card from you.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to part two of this morning's session. This is the joint session with the Seniors with Vision Loss Committee and the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Is Michael Salacci in the room?
Here.
Come on up. this morning, we are very fortunate to have Michael Salacci. He is the Regional Vice President for AT&T, and he is here to answer all of your telephone questions. So, Mike, I'll give you the microphone. Right here. Okay. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Shake your hand. Okay. Give me a moment. Take my coat off. I'm ready. Well, good morning. How's everyone this morning? I enjoyed my... I live here locally. Well, I say locally, I live in Thousand Oaks, which is about 50 miles away. But I enjoyed my drive early this morning to get here. I've come to LAX Airport many times, so pleasure to be here with you this morning. Again, Bernice, thank you. Thank you for inviting me and AT&T here to give a brief presentation, and I appreciate the setup that I can answer all of your questions. I've been with AT&T for nearly 30 years, but I don't know it all. But I will guarantee this, whatever I can't answer, I'll get you an answer. So I'll work with Bernice to do that. And really the purpose of my visit today is to talk about AT&T's commitment to accessibility and really to increase your awareness and understanding of all the things that AT&T is doing. I will tell you, as I was looking through what I'm going to talk to you about, I even learned a few things myself. And again, I've been here for 30 years. In fact, when I started with AT&T, it was the old AT&T. So quite a perspective in the industry. So, really with AT&T, the whole area of accessibility is really part of our culture and in our DNA, and we continue to work on that. And when I say that, it's in our human resources area. We also, as you may be aware, have an AT&T advisory panel on access and aging, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. We have strategic alliances and support. And, of course, you've probably heard of our AT&T labs, which are internationally famous, which is really our R&D arm. So I want to talk about each of these. From a human resources standpoint, with the idea of accessibility, we recruit, hire, retain, and promote people with disabilities. Why do we do that? Because it makes good business sense. We need to face the customers that we serve, and it makes perfect sense that we are going to reach out and make sure that our employee base reflects the customers that we serve. So we have recruitment that's targeted to people with disabilities and, you know, directed at making sure that the general diversity makeup of our employee base is correct. That includes vets as well. We also, in the process of that recruitment, we make sure that the application process is easy and accessible for people with all abilities and disabilities. And we also ensure reasonable accommodations, and we have, as you would imagine, productivity tools that are provided, things like screen readers, braille typewriters, screen magnifiers. So it's not just a matter of outreach and ensuring that we have the right employee makeup, but it's also ensuring that those employees are successful. And it also includes that once you become an employee of AT&T, whether ability or disability, and in fact people with disabilities have the same access to networking and career development as employees without disabilities. In fact, we have 11 employee resource groups. These are specific diversity groups within the corporation, and one of these groups we call IDEAL, which are employees with disabilities. And these are affinity groups that actually focus on various areas of diversity. We have AT&T veterans, we have Asian American employees, we have, in fact, you may have heard of our telephone pioneers. That's our largest. I will tell you, like I say, with nearly 30 years, I've been a pioneer. Used to be in the old days, you had to have 19 years of service to become a pioneer. Now you can become a pioneer as soon as you become an employee. But I've been a proud pioneer for years. So those are examples of how we provide networking for our employees with different diversity segments. We also make sure that employees with disabilities have the same career and development opportunities. We have, as you can imagine, AT&T is a Fortune 10 company. We have our own what we call T University, which provides leadership and capability training. And so we also have external opportunities. Let me talk about the AT&T Advisory Panel on Access and Aging. This is essentially our focus panel, which includes all of our senior leadership in various parts of the business, as meeting three times a year with leaders of like Bernice in various sectors when it comes to disability access and aging. So it's interesting, the importance of having that panel is not so much, while it's important to communicate what AT&T is doing to the leaders across these important disability segments, it's even more important that we listen to and then by listening, that helps us continue to assure that the products and services and the technology that we provide provide accessibility for folks. That's another example. We have as you may have heard, we have AT&T Foundation. That's our charitable arm. It's through that foundation that we're able to support various causes and important community things, but it's also our ability through our foundation to support, you know, disability, diversity, and aging communities. Examples of that are, for example, the programs with OASIS. which helps seniors learn how to use mobile phones. In fact, I have the great privilege to represent AT&T to the Congress of California Seniors. Many of you may know that organization. Me as the local executive working with our foundation, I've been able to support the Congress of California Seniors in their very special projects to link the 700-plus senior centers in California to make sure that they have access to the right technology and, more importantly, that they're all linked together. So it's been a pleasure to do that sort of work, but that's an example of the kind of things that that we do with the foundation. And I could go on, but I don't think you want to really as much hear about that. As far as yes, ma'am. Our pleasure. Thank you, Bernice. Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up. That's a definite example of the important groups and constituencies that we need to support. Because, again, the reason we have a foundation, the reason we have a charitable arm, is to make sure that we're out supporting the communities and our customers that support us. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And, in fact, I probably should have mentioned at the outset, not to bore you, because it's not about me, but to kind of give you a perspective. I'm AT&T's regional executive in the Los Angeles area. Me and my team represent AT&T to cities, counties, county officials, state, federal, but also community organizations. We're the face of AT&T. We direct the philanthropic. We get involved in chambers of commerce. We do. So it's the example that you brought up, Bernice, is definitely in me and my team's wheelhouse, because that's what we do regionally. And then in my case, I also have affiliations with the state. I mentioned our AT&T Labs. Everyone's heard of AT&T Labs. I mean, remember, one thing I remember is they invented the transistor. Used to be Bell Labs, correct. As I mentioned, I've been here almost 30 years, and when I started, when it was the old AT&T, you had Western Electric, you had Bell Labs, you had all of those arms, and now Bell Labs became AT&T, AT&T Labs. But there are a number of things that, and the scientists, and many Nobel Prize winners, are constantly working on new ways to harness technologies for accessibility for people with disabilities. Examples are speech recognition and text-to-speech technology. You've heard of this thing called the cloud. I'm learning about the cloud myself, but as someone simply explained to me, it's just a whole bunch of neat applications and stuff that's housed somewhere else in the cloud that you're able to access through the Internet. So we're using that cloud technology to further speech recognition and text-to-speech technology. And, in fact, with that, we got an award from the FCC recently just based on a new evolution of that, which, of course, helps. We have glow caps on pill bottles, which remind customers to take pills with an alarm and text message. And if you miss dosages, a text will be sent to your doctor. You've also heard, if you miss a few dosages, it'll, I guess unless you don't enable the text to your doctor, but I think it's a wise thing to do. And then shoe soles are connected to the network. And so, it's a way for medical professionals to understand whether someone is becoming unstable. It's almost like a life alert sort of application. But these are just examples of what our AT&T Labs have developed and will continue to develop, which, of course, help people with disabilities. And when I say disabilities, and you are full aware, it's not only visual, it's cognitive, it's physical. I can personally relate to the cognitive. I have a 20-year-old son who's autistic. He's in the moderate range of the spectrum, but I know he's making sense of his world on a daily basis. And so I have a great, personal appreciation to AT&T's commitment to accessibility and making sure that we are developing products and services that help people have a full and happy, and productive life. Talking a little bit, yes, I hear a question out there. Sorry. a little bit more about accessible and usable products and services. I'm going to talk just real briefly about what's the market value. It's pretty obvious why AT&T does this. Our universal design policy, our National Center for Customers with Disabilities, which will be a very important thing to note to you because that's a great resource to answer your questions about our products and services and to make sure you get what you need. And then talk a little bit about our wireless devices and services because, as I mentioned, I've personally, in my 30 years, seen the industry change from a telephone company to a mobile broadband company. While wireline services are certainly still important, people still have landlines, more and more people have wireless phones. In fact, nationally, there's a study that says at least 25% of people have disconnected their landlines and are totally wireless. So we are a predominantly mobile broadband company, but at the same time, you know, wireline services are very important. But I want to talk a little bit about just the range of wireless devices that we have that certainly help folks that are visually impaired. Okay, and I will also say, I'll say this probably a couple of times, but I will make sure, Bernice, that you get a copy of the presentation deck that I did have, which also will have reference numbers, especially the number to reach the National Center for Customers with Disabilities. I have those 866 numbers. I could tell you about it now, but maybe I'll wait until the end and make sure you get that. As far as market, and you all know this full well, as far as looking at the market and the demographics across the United States, customers with disabilities make up a group of more than 54 million in the United States. And you probably know that number is underreported because there are some people who won't identify. It controls over $220 billion in annual discretionary spending. And, you know, and this segment is also covered by many federal and state government rules that, you know, require procurement of accessible technology. You know, the other part of that segment is aging adults. Over the age of 50, nearly $400 billion in discretionary spending just in 2003, and that's a number of years ago. I can identify I'm over 50, so I must be in that range. And this is a growth area. We're a mobile broadband company, or the industry is really about wireless. Communications industry is really about wireless. It's a growth segment, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. What you all full well know, I guess, since January 1st of this year, as far as looking at aging, and as we age, there is unfortunately a higher, I guess, correlation with disability or higher possibility of disability is the rate of Americans turning 65 is approximately 10,000 a day, and it's going to increase over the next 19 years. I actually sat in here on the earlier panel, and I was listening, you know, hearing about the question had to do with seniors and whether how their affinity to use the internet and to use PCs, and then the whole comment about, well, now you have the baby boom, which I'm a part of. I'm actually in the middle of the baby boom years, and that there may be more proficiency as far as being comfortable with the technology and computers and the like. But what you all know is that segment, it's like a big bubble that's traveling through and mainly driven by the baby boom years. We have a universal design policy. It's basically something that we ensure that, and to give you a definition, universal design is the practice of designing products so they are usable by the broadest possible audience without reducing the usability or attractiveness for mass or core audiences of the product. It's basically ensuring when we design something that it has the you know, maximum flexibility, benefits, and ease of use. It's really all about accessibility. That policy we have isn't just about what we design. It also, we also encourage that our suppliers, our partners, that everyone, we encourage them also to design or to have accessibility in mind when they design their products and services. And it makes sense because it increases the usability and increases the productivity. And, hey, it also lowers costs. If you design, I learned this. At one point in my career, back in the olden days, I was an applications programmer for an old business language called COBOL. But the one thing that we learned was if you define something correctly up front, you're going to be better off on the back end. My father still tells me today, son, you got to go slow to go fast. And I truly believe that. So this universal design policy, we actually have a design developer tool, and we make that available to our suppliers and others. You know, it's like an open network because we want to encourage the maximum amount of accessibility. Now, I mentioned about the AT&T National Center for Customers with Disabilities. This is really our one-stop shop, our customer service center for people with customers with disabilities, including seniors. And with this center, we have specialized, trained customer service representatives who really are here to help you with your wireline and wireless questions and needs. Okay, I said wireline and wireless. These representatives can assist with, you know, alternative billing format, in like Braille or large print. They can assist you with directory assistance as far as the exemption from actually getting a charge on the wireline, if qualified. It would be no charge for a local directory assistance call. On the wireless side, if qualified, it would be no charge for national directory assistance. Wireline and wireless. I will tell you that the representatives in this center are also very knowledgeable about our wireless devices. So if you have questions, granted, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself, not that I have to follow my own slides, but I would tell you that really the place you want to go to answer your questions about our wireless devices, phones, and services is to an AT&T store. Now, I will tell you, in some cases, not every AT&T store will have all of, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the wireless phones that are available that have the maximum amount of accessibility. But not all of those phones may be available in every store. I would also say that my understanding is that our service representatives, our sales agents who are in the stores, are specially trained, including to work. Pardon me? Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to get to that. Actually, one of the things I'm going to say here is if you have had a bad experience or you have an current issue, if at the end of this you give me your name and your information, I'll be happy to follow up on it for you. The reason I'm saying this about going to the store first is because those folks are trained or should be trained to be able to address that. However, if you get your customer service needs or your issues addressed, the National Center for Customers with Disabilities is the default. That's going to be your resource to go to. But, again, I'm encouraging you to go to stores. It doesn't sound like it may be the case always, but I'm happy to address any specific item. Again, Okay. All right. Appreciate that. That's a fair comment. Again, if when I give you the phone number, the 800 number for the National Center that we have, that could be a question. But again, if you have a specific service issue or problem, I'm happy to take your name and contact information, and I'm happy to trace that down for you. I don't want Bernice to get mad at me. I'm just kidding you, Bernice. All right. Maybe I'll distract her from you. How's that? I'll be the object. and again, a little bit more about the about wireless services for customers with disabilities. I already talked about the directory assistance exemption, which means that a national 411 call will not cost you, but as far as going through the qualification process, you want to call that national center, and they will make sure that that's taken care of. You can take. I'll take them whenever you. I understand. My response, no, wait a second. My response to that is, it's just the way our billing cycles work. I'll answer, but Bernice, if you can add to that, and then I'll answer the.
So we've been educated a fair amount, and we were the ones that pushed for them. You know, in the beginning, you had to call, and they would remove $15 worth of directory assistance charges from your wireless phone. Okay, so I'm going to talk about two things here. So we pushed for it, and they finally said that they got it so that it would be all directory assistance charges would be exempt. And they finally made it so it would happen automatically. But what has happened to Donna is she has signed up for UVerse. And so she has her cell phone, her landline, and her cable line all in one. And now she has to go back to the old method of calling every month to get them removed. And that doesn't seem like it should be that way. Secondly, the other problem that we're having is that we used to have a form that we filled out for local directory assistance exemption and a separate one for a long distance directory assistance exemption. And now that you have this national directory assistance process, we seem to have lost our ability to get national numbers without a charge. And, you know, the charges are showing up on our bills when we haven't made a call for a directory assistance charge outside of our area. And one of the other things about that is that one of my theories is that when you call and you want a local number, let me use an example of a fast food chain, like In-N-Out Burger, okay? So you want the In-N-Out Burger that's down the street from you. But they slam you into some number, like a toll-free number or something, and then you get this charge on your account. And so I hope I haven't confused you, but there's three things there that we need to deal with. And
A fourth thing that I was just told and have not checked it out yet is that you can get exemption from having your call put straight through on your landline.
Yeah, call completion.
Uh-huh. And I don't know where and how we get that form in and how that works. So
Can I answer the last one first? Let me answer the easy one. The call completion, there would also be an exemption for charge for call completion on wireless and wireline side by going through the national center. So what I failed to mention, I appreciate you bringing up the question, is that it's not just 411, the directory assistance, but it's also call completion. As far as I'm honestly, and I expected this, I'm going to have to follow up and work with you, Bernice, to answer some of these questions because the question that was raised, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your first name.
Donna.
Pardon me?
Donna.
Is what happens with our, I guess I'll call it our unified billing. If you have UVerse with landline service and your wireless all in one bill, what... And UVerse TV, high speed internet, the bundle, exactly. How does that impact the exemption for directory assistance, either wireline and wireless, and call completion? So I'm going to have to get an answer to that for you.
What is call completion?
Call completion is where once you're on the line with a directory assistance operator, they offer to connect you to that number. Thank you. You can come up here and you're. He's doing great. So as far as what I'm going to do as a follow-up, Donna and Bernice and anyone else, is the whole area of directory assistance call completion, especially if we're talking about UVerse billing, all of that. Let me get a comprehensive answer for you, and I'll email that back. Well, I'm sorry. That shouldn't be the case. I'll add that to my answer. I want to make sure I'll put this in our detailed answer back so you have this, but in my mind, if it works correctly and you certainly qualify to get an exemption for the directory assistance, either wireline or wireless, and call completion, that it should be in your customer account information and that anytime you make that call, there is no charge that hits the bill. But if for whatever reason that charge inadvertently or accidentally does hit your bill, and then they do because there's no... I hear that.
The one bill I absolutely hate out of all the bills that I have is the telephone bill.
Let alone all the other charges on there that have nothing to do with AT&T, all the taxes and charges. Well, to me, the ideal situation is to make sure it works right the first time so there isn't a need to credit an incorrect charge. How's that? Okay. Yeah, I hope you get a sense that I understand.
I remember when we were on this advisory panel, they basically, when we were kept beating up with making free and everything, they said, well, we've got 14 different billing systems because we acquired this company and this company. This was what I couldn't distinguish. The time we were in it, went from Pac Bell Wireless to the specific telesis to singular or whatever to whatever. It was very chaotic responses.
And I'll confirm that for you. How's that? That's not the chaotic part, but the billing platforms, because it's the nature, it's, and I'm not explaining it away, it's the nature of the industry. The industry is so hyper-competitive, and there have been so many combinations, which, frankly, if you don't realize it has, because it's so white-hot competitive, especially in the wireless space, in the last 10 years, wireless prices have gone down 50%. And even the last couple of years, the charge for so much texting or data usage has gone down 80 or 90%. So, but with that come sometimes different billing platforms. But I will tell you that every effort is being made, even if it's in the medium term, is to ensure that all of this is transparent to the customer. The fact of the matter is you have I don't want to call it inside information, but you have a greater appreciation given your participation on that panel. But that is the reality. In effect, I could spend another 30 to 45 minutes here talking, giving you a history lesson on the evolution of the telecommunications industry, and I've been a front seat observer of that, and especially with Pacific Bell, which is where I say AT&T. I got my start in Pacific Telephone up in San Francisco, and I then worked for the Pacific Telesis Holding Company, which, as you know, with the break of AT&T, created seven regional Baby Bell holding companies. Pacific Telesis was the one that was over Pacific and Nevada Bell. And I actually had a perch where I understood and saw all the diversification that happened with all the competitive companies. And it's just, I could spend time, but that's not what you have. Bernice told me that's not why I'm here, so I can't talk about that. Yeah. Well, my folks have the same phone number they've had for 60 years, and in the day of exchanges, as many of you remember, when and my folks live in San Luis Obispo, and it was Liberty 39231. It was basically started with the exchange, and were the first two numbers, and then so on and so forth. Just to talk a little bit about, and I'm happy to answer more questions, and if I can't answer them very well, I will follow up and get more information. But yes, the wireless space and wireless services are very, very much a part of what we at AT&T are all about, because I mentioned to you we're a mobile broadband company. People want access to broadband and the Internet mobily, and they want it now. And they don't want, they want it fast, they want it now, they want it everywhere. And it's very much understand. But as far as wireless services with customers with disabilities, I talked about National Directory Assistance Exemption. We have Mobile Speak and Mobile Magnifier by Code Factory, which is available on select wireless devices, not all devices, but select devices. We have which I'll talk about a little more. We have a range of handsets and devices. Yes, ma'am.
With the Mobile Speak and Mobile Magnifier, I like it very, very much. But where can I get Mobile Speak and Mobile Magnifier and information on shortcuts? Like how to turn the magnification off or on without having to go into the menu?
I'll provide that. I'll send that back through Bernice. I don't know, other than my first, where I would go is the AT&T website. I'll get the specific on that. But I will find the answer to your question.
I realize you want to spend more time on the mobile devices and that, but if I could, because I'm going to get back to it, I'd like to make a plea for keeping the landlines. And I really would like to ask you, in terms of, you know, considering how competitive the companies are, all of the global market conditions, and the fact that we seem to more and more in our industries play to the biggest common denominator and the minority groups or the small groups of interest. And I'm thinking really of seniors especially. Sure, we need our mobile devices, but landlines are so important for so many reasons. Do you think that considering the cost, the infrastructure cost, and everything involved in supporting those, and the fact that everything is going mobile, do you think in 10 years or 20 years, honestly, that we're going to have landlines anymore?
Well, you'll appreciate that. If I could see into the future, I would be retired. Because I would have done a better job in my 401k. But my sense is, in the foreseeable future, landlines are not going to go away. The reality is, the only reason I gave you, and I'm sorry if I've overemphasized an aspect of AT&T's business, which is wireless, which is where the world and the industry has gone. And there are, as I mentioned, the statistic, you know, up to, I guess, nationally 25% of people have disconnected. I still have a landline. My wife won't let me disconnect. I'm just kidding. Right. So in answer to your question, I don't believe, and AT&T has no intention of abandoning the landline business, because the reality is that we've invested, hundreds of billions of dollars in the infrastructure, and frankly, that telephony, that AT&T network is, and that old, I won't call it old, but the telephony wireline network is a huge critical backbone to the wireless network, because without, you know, you may use your wireless phone, and then you'll send a signal to one of the cell sites, and it'll go back to a cell site switching center, but ultimately it's going to go back into the telephone network. And so I'm giving you a long answer, but I do not see that. And the reality is what AT&T has done, and this is not meant to be a marketing pitch because UVerse services came up, is that we realized that we needed to leverage our landline services, and we, with the increased technology, found a way to be able to push video and higher speed internet over the old copper network. And so that's why we have UVerse services. But I don't believe that landlines will, in the near future, ever go away. So, I mean, don't ever get in your mind that AT&T is abandoning that business. It's still a very important part of our business, and the reality is that there's such competition that folks have more choices than just, you know, the traditional phone companies. They can go to cable and get VOIP, you know, video over internet protocol, or they can go and have other means. Skype. Did that answer your question, ma'am? Okay. Yes.
It's very annoying. And
My recommendation will be that when I give you the 800 number, is to call the National Center, describe your, and see if they have a way to either for you to adjust just how you're receiving your service. That may take care of it. But that would be my recommendation. Over and above, you can certainly give me your information, and I'll have someone call you. Well, here's what's going to happen. You know, so I walk into the room. I mean, I meet Bernice. My name is Mike Salacci, and you know, you don't know me. I'm with AT&T, and then I walk out the door. But I'm going to leave my contact information. And if there are any follow-up questions after this session or something else that occurs or a specific customer issue, I'm happy to have someone call you specifically and work through it. Yes, ma'am. That's okay.
But when you were talking about what you were talking about before Susan asked the question, the question that I have, I have landline, and the reason why I'm keeping my landline is because I want to be able to, that if the cell phone, if there's an emergency, then I will still have the one phone that's hooked to the old, what do you call it, hookup for the...
Yeah, the legacy wired network, the wired network.
Hooked into the wire.
Okay.
But now that I have the bundle, they tell me that it doesn't matter, that that won't work.
Well, let me ask you: Did you in your bundle receive? Did you keep your landline service separate, or did you also get the VoIP? Okay, but is it? Did you also, when you purchased UVerse, get the voice over internet protocol, the phone option as well? VoIP service is different than your because VoIP video over internet protocol is basically telephone service that goes over the internet as opposed to the traditional landline phone that goes over the legacy wireline network. Okay, and I think that's what's happening is that when you purchased UVerse, you got the TV service. You probably got the phone service, too, and the phone service is different than your traditional landline service. The phone service is an internet phone. It's phone service over the internet, and then you probably got high-speed internet as well. So you got three items, and so what they're telling you is and cell phone in your bill, right? So the VoIP phone actually goes out over the internet, doesn't go through the telephone network. There you go. There's someone who understands. I'm not supposed to use acronyms, but you can. But that's why. Right. But that's an explanation of. That's an explanation of why, but I will tell you that you would expect me to say that the reliability on the network is like 99.999%, so it's very, very rare remote that it's going to go out of service.
Well, that's going to be a problem for my parents because they're on the UVerse, and they're thinking about dropping the UVerse. And if that means that they're going to have problems with their phone line, because if you're on UVerse and you go back to what you were on before, you can't do that. Once you're on UVerse,
I'm not sure that that's actually the case. If you were to disconnect your UVerse service and wanted to go back to a traditional landline phone, my sense is you could do that. It's just going to take a tech. You still have the wire. There's still a way to connect you back into the wired telephone network. It's just that you'll, in the case of if you chose to disconnect the wired phone to be able to get the internet phone as part of the bundle, like Donna did, then my sense is you could drop that internet phone from the bundle. It would cost you more because you're not getting the bundle discount. But you'd have to then arrange for having your wired service reestablished. So I'm happy to follow up and provide an answer on that too. No, I'm not. What's the name? That's fine.
But what I discussed this with him, and they explained to me that if I transferred from my legacy AT&T to the new AT&T, that it could never go back.
You know, you may be right. My belief is that's not the case, but what I have to do, honestly, because what did I say at the outset of this? I said, I don't know at all. And what I didn't know, I was going to follow up and get an answer. So that'll be one that I'll clarify.
Because we have three landlines, and they talked me into changing one of them. And they said, oh, your phone bill will go down. Well, it didn't go down, and I'm very unhappy with the fact that it's now not under the legacy.
I'll clarify that. What I was going to talk about, which I can forego, I was really going to talk about our wireless devices and those devices that we have with accessibility benefits, starting with the iPhone, because we have a range of select devices that have incorporated, incorporated the sort of accessibility applications that you would want and need, and starting with with our most sophisticated smartphone, which is the iPhone. Everyone's familiar with the iPhone, and we've just come out with the 4S. But it has, and you may know this already, is it has a Braille display support, screen reader with VoiceOver, zoom and magnify, white on black for high contrast. But that is, as far as one of the more high-end, more sophisticated smartphones, if you've heard the term smartphone, the iPhone is has those features and those functions incorporated. Going kind of down the line, for those people who like flip phones, and I used to have a flip phone because I got tired of dialing a number in my pocket. So we have something called the Breeze, and the Breeze, which is of course one of our flip phone, is which is the phone that was designed with significant input from the AT&T Advisory Panel on Access and Aging, and then we have something called the AT&T Human Factors Lab, which is really looking at ergonomics and making sure that it has all of the features and functions for all of our customers, including those with disabilities. And it has things like a large bright screen, text and number keys that illuminate, phone menu displayed in a list for easy selection, You've got three one-touch buttons to dial, frequently called called numbers, dedicated camera and speakerphone buttons, so on and so forth. So it's this phone specifically was designed, again, by utilizing that AT&T Advisory Panel on Access and Aging, which, as I mentioned at the outset, is not so much communicating out the things that AT&T is doing, which I've been talking about here this morning, but also listening about what we're not doing and what we, you know, should be doing as far as design. I don't know specifically on the Breeze. So Bernice, you're saying that it is. But it's built. I think it's built into the iPhone. But I can. I will find out. It doesn't. At least my notes don't indicate that. What's that? Okay, I shouldn't be doing that. I understand they shouldn't be doing that. Okay, and again, I would suggest if that's the case, well, number one, what I would suggest is if you're getting that sort of poor service in a store, which makes me very unhappy, I would suggest that, well, it does. I'm not going to talk about where I fall in the management chain of AT&T, but I would say that you want to definitely make sure that a manager comes and helps you. Just say, I want to talk to a manager. And the store manager is a very responsible person, any particular store, or they wouldn't be the store manager, rest assured. A lot of their how they're evaluated is based on customer service and customer feedback. So that would be my recommendation. And the ultimate, as I mentioned, would be going to the National Center with the 800 numbers that I'll provide. Would it be helpful for me to provide those numbers right now? I mean, I'm going to follow up.
I do want to say the National Center is very, very good. The phone that I have now, it took them three phones to send to me and send back and forth. They worked with me. They worked with the magnification amplifier, a speech program, they did a very good job. I appreciate it.
And I will follow up on whether Mobile Speak and Mobile Magnifier is on the Breeze, the flip phone. But the phone number for the, again, National Center for Customers with Disabilities, this is a specific center that we've set up, for voice calls, the number is 1-866-241-6568. 1-866-241-6568. It also, I don't know if you want the TTY call number. That number I gave you will be the main number that you'll be able to get someone who can help you.
Thank you.
And I will. And I will. And you're absolutely correct. That's why there are AT&T, that's why there's a retail presence. So customers can go in and actually talk in person with someone who's knowledgeable and can help you. I mean, that's the business we're in. So when I say, I'll absolutely be happy to take that back. Because it wasn't about me just spouting off to you today. It was also about listening and answering questions and providing feedback. So. I absolutely agree, and I hope nothing in my comments about continuing to bring up the center as a resource meant to blow anyone off, not to use your words, but to put someone off and to say, well, that's the, I guess I call that the default. I think ultimately that center has been set up as a specialized center, but I agree with you absolutely. We all want to have a quality customer experience. I mean, granted, I work for AT&T. But I go to the AT&T store in Thousand Oaks, usually when my daughter lures me down there saying, oh, we're just going to look. We're not going to buy anything. Yeah, right. Two iPhones later. I'm not making light of it. I'm just saying I agree with you. I mean, as I work both sides of the street. I'm a senior management employee, but I'm also a customer. So thank you. I was just going to touch on, I could go on, but I mean, not only the iPhone, but the Breeze. You may also be familiar with the Pantech, Ease, which is really the next evolution from the Breeze. It's a non-flip phone, also has accessibility features. AT&T is the first company to bring accessibility to this new Android suite, mobile operating system, Android suite with 11 applications that you can download that have great accessibility features. The other thing I wanted to, before I at least close down the wireless side and maybe touch, I think I've already touched on the wireline side, but I'm happy to take more questions on that, is that just know for me, me and my team are actually working on this with our AT&T mobility engineering folks. AT&T, because it's a hyper-competitive business, it's all about the customer experience. And if a customer is not having a good wireless experience with their service, and I'm talking about a dropped call or a slow connection, customers have choices. And so AT&T, our wireless network folks, absolutely know where the coverage and capacity problem areas are, and we're working on those because, again, it's a hyper-competitive industry. And, in fact, my team... as I mentioned, what I do on behalf of AT&T, and we are working with cities and counties, basically government officials, we help try to get the approvals to be able to put up new cell sites or upgrade. What we're really working on now is true fourth generation wireless called LTE, and we are working very hard to continue to upgrade and expand the network. So I guess I'm leaving you with, we know where the problem areas are and working on them. Understand that it can be a frustration point, but overall, we feel that our network is fairly robust. I only say fairly, that's a bad qualifier. Is robust. How's that? Fairly robust. Strike that. I think I talked about wireline. a bit. And I think at this point, as I kind of wind it up, and I'm here to take more questions, and I know I have some homework assignments already, and I'm a guy that needs homework assignments, is that I just wanted to emphasize, first of all, thank you, Bernice. Thank you for inviting us. Thank you for allowing us to be here to share what it is that we're doing. Because, again, my purpose was to increase your awareness and understanding of what AT&T is doing in the whole accessibility area, and to emphasize that we continue to evolve and improve our culture. And we'd like to say that it's incorporated in our DNA as far as making sure that we are developing products and services that leverage the technology that have the maximum use for all of our customers, including customers with disabilities. And at the end of the day, if we don't delight our customers, customers are going to go somewhere else where they will be delighted. And so with that, I thank you very much for your time and attention, and I will take more questions and get more homework assignments. Haven't you used up all your... I'm just kidding. Yes, please. I don't, but... I'll find out specifically. And I think the answer is yes. It's when I was mentioning about the 11 different applications that we are able to download. Yeah, I did. But specifically, I can follow up with specifics about if there's a, what do I call it, a feature name or a brand name, you know. I'd be happy to do that. I did too. Correct. Are you my shill today? Yeah, we do. There are other, if you've heard of this, there are in cases where we have coverage problems in a specific area. We'll deploy what are called COWs, cellular on wheels. It's actually a mobile antenna, that a mobile cell site. And typically we do that for, say, a large event. Say there was an issue at a convention center or something, or a large, we will deploy that for temporary. We have done that in cases where there's a coverage issue somewhere else. We'll do it for a short-term period. There's another acronym called COLTS, Cellular on Light Trucks, and the same concept is that you're moving cellular equipment and antennas and be able to move it on a temporary basis. We use that also because, you can imagine, we're a communications company. For national disasters and the like, we'll deploy those to areas that have lost service due to a natural disaster. So in terms of the coverage here, I'm not what's called a radio frequency engineer, but I've played one on television. There are a lot of factors that go into why, say, inside the hotel, you may not have service, but you may have it outside. A lot of it has to do with the wireless waves and are they penetrating.
Well, interesting, because there's service in the restaurant, but there's no service here.
Well, I think it's close to the outside.
Floor.
You know, the windows right by the restaurant.
Right.
So it's
right, and a lot of it has to do with whatever cell site or sites we have. And again, I'm getting out of my, don't anybody quote me. I'm not an expert on the engineering side, but what I understand is that depending on the cell sites that we have that are serving, say, this hotel area, we may be in the process of upgrading those to a different radio wave spectrum that actually has radio waves that penetrate walls and do better in-building coverage. I think it's what's called 8A. The answer is yes. We have. Yes, I read that. I used to be, when I lived in the Bay Area for 15 years, I was a dedicated BART commuter, so I know what you're talking about. But there are different wireless applications that are called in-building solutions, where you'll have almost small little antennas around that will provide the wireless service inside. It could be an office building, it could be a hotel, it could be a convention center. We are also, not to bore you, but you got me down this path, is that there are different network applications as far as improving our coverage. You all are familiar with standalone, cell sites. Some of them look like fake trees. Some of them, you've seen the ugly ones. No one allows the ugly ones anymore, which is a good thing, because the reality is AT&T is in the business of, because people who think they're ugly are our customers too. So, it's in our best interest to make sure that they blend into the landscape. But there are other sorts of solutions other than freestanding. We put them on the sides of buildings, antennas. We also have, and I'm probably boring all of you to tears, is something called a distributed antenna system. It's like small antennas that you put on top of streetlights. And it has a smaller range of coverage, but it can actually be a good solution. And those of you who live in the Los Angeles area know, like Mandeville Canyon, the canyons, topographically, those are tough to cover. And so sometimes the best solution are smaller range, what we call smaller antennas. Also in certain urban areas where, for example, the community standard is fairly opposed to a freestanding cell site, you can put them on streetlights and it provides you that coverage. I know we're working on that. I've been deeply involved in that in the city of Beverly Hills. So, yes, exactly. Yes, ma'am, in the back. First of all, it is the practice. I know that full well. That's fine. The question is, as far as we're speaking about wireless, AT&T wireless data plans for data services. The question is it true that services, you pay for the services up front, meaning you're billed for the services for the month that you're going into? And why? The why I can't absolutely answer, but I can confirm that that's the case in all cases. I also know that as a customer myself, that you're paying for basically you signed up for a service for a period of time, and so you're basically not paying for it after you use it. You're paying for it. So you can use it. That's the closest I can get to why at this point, but it's basically you're paying for it so you can use it as opposed to after the fact. Ma'am? Ma'am, you had a question. Yes. Okay.
I just happened to run into it.
Sometimes some fonts are much better for low vision people than others.
Yeah. And I also want to find out if that font will change the print font in the internet. I have internet service also on my cell phone. Because that's the worst one that I can't read it apart.
Here's what I can do. Can I ask you generally where you live? Oh, you're up in, okay, Northern California. That's fine. Doesn't matter. If you provide me with your name and contact information, I can have someone call you. Actually, the ideal would be if I know that you live near an AT&T store, I can find out who the store manager is for that store and make sure that they set up an appointment that you can come go visit them in the store. My sense is that you probably want to, instead of talking to someone on the phone, it would be ideal to actually interact with someone in the store who knows how to do that. But I'm going to set it up. Yeah, I'm going to call, and then someone will. But I don't want to give the impression that that's the only way you get service, is that I call. But in the case, this is the extra added benefit because Bernice had me show up today. Other questions? I hope I was helpful. I appreciate the time. Bernice, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Anytime. And anyone else who would like me to, for a specific issue, want to give me your contact information, I'd be happy to follow it through. I'll be here. I'm not going to run out the door. I wouldn't do that. Thank you very much.